As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light, college football editor with The Athletic, and I'm joined by Ari Wasserman, our national recruiting writer for The Athletic. Today, Ari, we've got a very special guest, Dan Wetzel, columnist from Yahoo Sports, author of several books. I think I have a few up there on my bookshelf. Dan, welcome to the show. Thrilled to have you. I'm going to dive in. First question, what is your interest in college football recruiting?
I love it. I've always been into it.
So just like as a casual football fan, just liking to know where the top, who the
five stars are? In some ways, I like recruiting better than the games sometimes. Yeah. When I started in journalism, I did college basketball recruiting back in, a long time ago now. And recruiting to me, football or basketball, it's the least covered, most important thing in sports. Like, nobody really covers it as an actual thing. It's all where you go, what visit you're taking, where you going to school, right? It's nuts and bolts. But the actual, like, we spend all this time on the NFL draft and the NBA draft, but nobody does this. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. But when I first started, I would go to the really early on, like Nike All-American camps and ABCD camp and these AAU basketball. And instead of just being the what's your top five, I got into like the politics of it all, the battles between the shoe companies, the AAU coaches, the how do you recruit? What are you trying to do? I talked to all these guys, and I just always found it unbelievably fascinating because it's this huge part of their jobs, this coach's job. It determines pretty much who's going to win or lose. If you got the players, particularly in basketball, my gosh, one guy can change everything, right? And it just always found it completely fascinating. And that obviously when you get to football, it's very similar. I remember reading like Barry Switzer's old book, Bootlegger's Boy, when I was young, and just mind blown at these like crazy recruiting tales of him in these little West Texas towns and all the different stuff. So I've loved it. I've known Ari a long time, and I was always telling him, like, I think there's this huge market for recruiting. I don't want to call it intelligent recruit. I don't know what you're doing, right? Like, big picture recruiting trends, how this works, who's doing well, not just what are your five visits.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. And Mitch, I don't think that you, during the introduction, the introduction should have been best sports writer on the face of the earth. Because that's my opinion.
I say all this nice stuff about stars mattering. Look what I get. Mitch said he bought my books, though. He's the one. He's the one.
Soul Influence, right? Isn't that one of your first ones?
I wrote Soul Influence off of basketball recruiting.
I think he would have rather me bought his books when he was a young journalist than give him the introduction doesn't matter.
Thank you,
the money matters.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, here's the thing that's funny. So we have this baby that's 2 months old, and I have to like schedule my podcasts out.
Five-star baby, let's
and
be honest.
Five-star baby, three-star parent. And I have to like tell my fiance, here's when I can't be bothered. And I said, I had a podcast at 1:30 and Dan Wetzel's going to be on it. And she goes, that name sounds familiar, right? And I said, yeah, that's the really smart guy from the Aaron Hernandez documentary we just watched.
There you
and
go.
And then she put it all together. But I think you said this to me early on in our relationship, Dan, and I'll never forget it. And it's kind of been a driving force for me. And that is to cover things about events or things that people watch on TV that aren't televised. And like, this is what this is. You know, this is the 247 database is a huge database with a bunch of information that anybody can access. And they do a tremendous job of analyzing these prospects and ranking them. But it's how you apply that information that I think is the most interesting. It's not so much about the who's going where, you know, in a singular way. It's about trends. It's about philosophies, about where these programs are recruiting, why they're recruiting that way. And I think it tells the story even more than the NFL draft, or equally at least, to where these programs are headed. So I'm happy that you have appreciation for that. And the whole point of this podcast is to argue with each other about philosophical thought processes, yes, about the way that we view things. And I'm wrong all the time, but the one thing I will never not do is have a strong opinion about something. And when I have that opinion, I feel like I'm pretty passionate about it. And the first thing I think I wanted to tackle with you, and I've known that you're in Detroit, right? And you, yes, are around Michigan's football program to a certain extent, or at least very familiar with it. And I was wondering, based on this huge win they just had, what do you think of the way that they've recruited? How do you think that this should matter for them? And do you think that this could be a springboard into changing things there? Or do you think it was a flash in the pan? Like, what's your take on that?
So I think, you know, Harbaugh had this line after he beat Ohio State that this felt like the beginning. And we tried to drill down more on it. He's not exactly the, you know, going to wax philosophical for people.
That's about as good of a quote as you're going to get, I think,
for Harbaugh. Yeah. And he's like, well, I meant like now we could win the Big Ten and we could do, but I think it's a reboot. And you look at it, I think they could end up either flipping or getting 3 to 4 top 100 players in this last week, which is an astounding run for a program that did not, you know, this isn't Alabama closing or Texas A&M closing. It's like all of a sudden these kids want to go to Michigan. His recruiting so far, the problem's been, it's been scattershot. There's been, doesn't seem to be a plan that he sticks with. I'm going to recruit Ohio. Then I'm not, I'm going to have these satellite camps all over and find these diamonds in the rough. But then I stopped doing that. I'm going to hold spring practice at IMG Academy, right? Genius idea. Then they stop doing that. Like, so it's all been like hit or miss. And at the beginning, he's making all this noise in recruiting. He had, remember, he had signing with the Stars. He had like Derek Jeter at the,
yeah, at it was the awesome
thing.
Yeah.
Like, it was, he's doing, all right, okay. He's going to turn this thing into a game show. Like, I don't know, right? And then he stopped doing it. And you go, what's going on? So there hasn't been a consistency. And that's really what baffled me the most, because I was like, all right, I get it. Harbaugh's coming in and he's saying, we're not getting enough good players. So I'm going to create total chaos and get all this attention on us, and I'm going to go everywhere and I'm going to find play. You could not question his effort at the beginning, right? I mean, the guy's holding, he's out there shirtless at a satellite camp in the middle of summer in Prattville, Alabama. Like, Alabama and Auburn hadn't looked around. Like, there really aren't that many unknown prospects, but whatever. And then he went away from it. So it's, you know, it has not been great recruiting. He's been good because it's kids always want to play at Michigan. It's a great place to go to school. It's a great place to live. It's a great stadium. It's a great helmet. It's right. So he does pretty well. And look, he's got a top 4 team, right? So he's got good enough players, and he does find guys. Son Haskins is a hell of a running back, right? I mean, some of these guys, like that guy, he's going to be a good pro. And so he finds some guys, but recruiting wise, I'd like to see him just take a plan and stick with it.
You know,
and I don't care what that plan is.
Is interesting is that all those ideas were great. The signing with the Stars idea was great. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't do that every year, you know? And I've yelled at Mitch about this all the time, and it seems to me that Michigan, in my opinion, and you can tell me if I'm wrong and I get into arguments with Nick Baumgartner about this, but I believe that Michigan's ceiling as a program is Ohio State. You know, and I don't know if that's wrong or right or what, but finding the Hassan Haskins of the world isn't how you're going to win national championships right. every year. It's getting these five-star prospects who are making decisions in this next week. Do you think that Michigan's ceiling is that, or do you think that once every 5 or 6 years, this kind of a season is the ceiling of that program? And do you ever think that they could sign 10 top 100 players in a cycle the way that Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia have been doing?
My guess is no. The thing about Michigan to me, living here and being covering the program for a long time, is the folklore doesn't match the reality. That's what I always say. And the folklore is the winningest program in college football history. And you hear that and you think, oh, this is the number one program in college football history. Well, that's the most wins, right? Which means back in, whatever, 1923, they were racking up wins. Like, they've always been good.
They've never stunk. They've never had that 5 to 10
years. Except for Rich Rod. Yeah, they never had that 10 years of nothing. They've always been good. They've never, and they got 11 national, I don't care about those titles. Before integration, forget, who cares? Even before 1980.
If it didn't happen before 2000, I don't care.
I mean, you just laugh at some of it. Like, I'm guessing that the Jackson State team with Walter Payton and like 14 other pros would absolutely have killed the SEC back then. Okay, I'm sorry. That team's better than your team. I don't believe these teams. So whatever, but everyone can have their trophies. That's fine. But if you look at it, since like the 40s or something, they've won half a national title. They won 1997. Bo Schembechler never won a national title. Bo Schembechler would win the Big Ten, go to the Rose Bowl, and usually lose. And that was good enough but to be the winningest program, but it doesn't mean you're the champ. Now, the 97 team shared a title, but that was a very, very good team, and they had Charles Woodson. But Georgia's won a national title. Colorado's won a national title, right? You don't look at those and go, you are have to be in that mix every year. And so I don't know that Michigan has the will or the want to be a total all-in football thing, and you know it just takes everything. This is a school that didn't fire Jim Harbaugh, right? That said, hey, how about we cut your pay? And you have a coach like Jim Harbaugh who says, yeah, okay, I'll take a pay cut. How many coaches in the SEC would take the pay cut, let alone be offered that deal? And he took it. And now he's got all these incentives. He's just giving the money away, right? It's just institutionally a little different. And so I don't think they can be that year-in, year-out contender. I do think they can do this a little more often. And, you know, if let's say they get Dante Moore, a great junior quarterback out of King High School in Detroit. I've watched him play. He's tremendous. You know, he's behind Arch Manning and Malachi Nelson on the ratings, but I wouldn't really care. I would take that. Like, if they get him, does that off of this and does it lead into this surge? Yeah, they could be a pretty good team, but I don't think they're ever going to be signing 10 top 100 players every single year.
And one thing that I've kind of learned from Ari as I've started working from him more is that fascinates me about the theory of recruiting. You know, you talked about Michigan not necessarily having a coherent plan. Who would have put together that the fact that Kentucky football has gotten a lot better in recent years, in part because Michigan isn't recruiting the way it should. Like, Michigan right. isn't going into Ohio like they did in the 70s and 80s and maybe the 90s. And Kentucky has made a living with Vince Marrow going in there with a coach who's from Ohio. And, you know, if Michigan had been doing its thing in Ohio, maybe Kentucky's not where they are. And maybe that's oversimplifying things,
maybe Cincinnati's not in the playoff.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, Ari always talks about Michigan not going out of its footprint, not going to California like Ohio, not going to Texas like Ohio State's going into Texas, right. not going into South Florida. But maybe for Michigan, the best thing is just staying, following that footprint that made them so good in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, you look a little bit at the changing demographics of like a place like Ohio. I think there's less prospects in state and things like that. This isn't the Bo Schembechler era when, you know, Toledo used to turn out a lot of players, especially those Catholics. And that was a place that Michigan got a lot of great players out of. But yeah, they don't recruit Northeast Ohio enough and things like that. I don't know. Kentucky's always been fascinating to me. I remember when I wrote a column a long time ago. I think Mark Stoops is one of his first recruiting classes. And it was like, this is going to be interesting. Because he came in and took not just letting Ohio State stop recruiting. You know, they used to sign 18 kids from Ohio. Now they sign 5. seven, right? So here's these players. Michigan State made a living off them for a long time with Mark D'Antonio, but all of a sudden that kind of faded. And Kentucky came in and grabbed all those really nice players that aren't Ohio State level, but boy, they can play and they develop, and you've got a really good SEC program. And that's a smarter plan than Kentucky saying, we're just going to recruit Atlanta. Well, you're like the 43rd school recruiting Atlanta. Why don't you try this? And it's worked great. The number of kids from Youngstown and Columbus and all that that have gone to Kentucky has changed everything.
The whole idea, Mitch, and not to interrupt you, but like, these coaches are making anywhere between $5 and $10 million at all levels of the Power Five. And I think if you look across the board at all these, and of course the Ohio States and the Georgia and the Alabamas might not fall into this because their brands and their cool kids club mantra basically kind of helps them transcend having a plan. But how many Power Five coaches do you think have a clear, identifiable recruiting plan that only is proven to work, but they execute? I think you can make the case that it's like 10%. And you have these guys out here that are making millions and millions of dollars, and nobody really knows. It seems like they don't know what they're doing sometimes. It's like, why are you recruiting this area? Why are you spending time in this area? And it's just like, you have to have a plan when you come in. And I find it fascinating that, you know, and I think that's part of the reason why I get so worked up about when coaches get up in the news conference and say, yeah, stars don't matter, or we're not going to do this, or we'll talk about recruiting when it's time for recruiting. It's like, it is 85% of your job, not only going to get these kids, but having a clear, identifiable plan that you can follow. And it just blows my mind to me that so many coaches, it's like Jim Harbaugh is going to the playoff this year, and he might win a playoff game. Hell, he might even make it to the national championship game. I couldn't tell you what his recruiting plan is. And that's not to pick on Jim Harbaugh. What's Texas's recruiting plan? What was USC's when Clay Helton was there? And it's right. Just like, these are all very clear and identifiable plans that they're just not following. Then do you think it's possible to build a program without that?
They all have a plan. It's or it changes. They execute it. Yeah. Or it changes. Yeah. Harbaugh's changed. But I mean, when you sit around with coaches, football or basketball, they talk about recruiting. And they talk about jobs. That's all they talk about. They don't sit around and talk about, hey, did you see that the stuff fans talk about? You see that late field goal by so-and-so? Or
yeah.
Do you see that play? Or, you know, what do you think of the BCS or the playoff rank? They don't care about that. They're talking about recruiting. So they have, I mean, there's a lot of things that coaches talk about. You know, if you're going to recruit out of, if you're going to go to Texas, go to Houston. Kids in Houston will leave. Right. But kids in other parts of the state will not go. And you want to recruit Florida, anything south of Orlando, the kids will leave. It's very hard to get a kid out of Jacksonville to leave the SEC, but you can get a kid from Fort Lauderdale. Right. There's certain areas. Right. It's the same thing in basketball. Philadelphia, it's so hard to get a Philly kid to leave. Why? I don't know. But you can get a kid from D.C. to leave. Some of this stuff doesn't make any sense, but it's just what
that'd
it is.
That'd be a hell of a story, though, if you came up with like every single pocket of America where it's just like the coach's handbook to areas not to recruit.
Well,
if you're not
I grew up in New Jersey, and that's, you know, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Kids leave New Jersey.
But yeah, I also kids wonder, too. Like, regular kids want to go to school there, right? Like, you have to have these ties. And some kids, but there are other places they're like, no, I'm going to the in-state school. I'm not leaving, right? So they have plans. But you're right. If you execute your plan, I'll give you, again, I'll go to basketball. But like Tom Izzo came in. He was, you know, Michigan State was this program. Like they had Magic Johnson. They won the title. But, I mean, you know, Magic Johnson grows up in 3 miles from campus. It's not like this was a superstar program. Tom Izzo comes and he's struggling. He just says, I'm recruiting Michigan and Ohio and Indiana, and that's it. There's enough guys. If I get my guys – from those states, and they get a little bit of Illinois or whatever, but not much. Chicago, we'd always miss. And if you look at Tom Izzo's teams, like every single team is exactly the same. There's like a point guard from Detroit or Flint. There's a big power forward from Grand Rapids. There's a shooter from Indiana. Like it's the same team for, why was he going on 25 years?
And they're
he's
all
made
good.
Like, yeah. You know, 10 Final Fours, or I don't know what he's made, right? But it's like, that's Michigan State, and you could pretty much pick the high schools and go, oh, this kid, oh, I went and got this kid from Cleveland, but I don't, you know, and it's like, wow, he has a plan, he follows it, and he's not sitting around going, I got to get on this plane and fly out to Oakland or San Francisco and recruit this kid. That kid ain't coming. I'll take my shot on the guy from Fort Wayne, Indiana. He'll drive up, like, you know, and so he felt comfortable with that and he followed that plan.
All right, Ari, I want to transition to something that we haven't talked about yet, and it's kind of emerged in the last couple of days. Chip Kelly's, Oregon's interest in Chip Kelly, the one coach in the past 10 or 15 years who has managed to win at a very high level without elite recruiting, has not recruited very well to UCLA. So for both of you guys, if you're Chip Kelly, are you interested in Oregon? But more important to me, more interesting to me, if you're Oregon, are you interested in Chip Kelly? But you'd be leaving.
Go ahead, Ari.
You'd be going from a coach who subscribes to the Ari Wasserman stars matter to a coach who wants to coach him up and develop.
My thing about the Chip Kelly to Oregon thing is I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd watch. Be fun for us.
It'd be fun to watch. I don't know if it makes sense. What Chip Kelly did was he identified and created an offense and a brand at a place where they could catch college football off balance and run a scheme that people weren't ready for, and they got specific players in order to make that scheme work to its best. And I think being genius enough to change the way the game is played to this day is a really cool thing to have on your resume. The thing I don't know about Chip Kelly is if he has the ability to do that again. And if you can't do that again, and everybody's caught up and is hip to your plan or your offensive philosophy, then this whole evil genius doesn't need to worry about talent thing goes out the window. And it's just like, even when you look at Oregon at the height of Oregon, it still never won a national championship. And maybe part of the reason why is because Dennis Dixon blew his knee out. And I was 10 feet away from that when it happened because he was at Arizona at the time. Or maybe, but there's always the Alabama, Ohio State boogeyman at the end of the road that has 20 first round draft picks on its roster, half of which aren't even playing in the game. So like that idea of Chip Kelly, Mike Leach, some of the names that you might come up with that have transcended had transcendent results without the stars. I just don't know if that is like an acceptable thing anymore. I don't think that you could just accept the fact that the coach is just going to go recruit people that he doesn't, you know, care about their recruiting profile, or he doesn't think, or that other recruiting analysts don't think are talented enough because it fits his identifiable offensive plan, and think that that's going to win games at a high level. Maybe in the Pac-12, UCLA at times has been fun to watch. Last year, I think they lost like four of their games by a combined 7 points. I'm not saying he's not a good coach, but I don't know if you could go up to Oregon, because like this is in LA. He's not recruiting that great in LA. Now you're going to tell him to go up to Oregon where there's no footprint of talent and go back down to recruiting California from afar and picking up 3-star prospects who have an offer from maybe Arizona and a bunch of Group of Five teams. That's not going to get it done at Oregon. That's my opinion.
I would agree mostly with Ari. I mean, basically, if you lose that schematic advantage, is he that great of a coach? I don't know. We'll see. The one thing I would say is at this point of the coaching carousel, it's not like there's 20 identifiable other options. So he would be very exciting. And in the short term, Mario Cristobal left him a ton of talent. You know, I mean, that cupboard is full up there. So does he come in? But yeah, how hard does he want to work? Where is he going to get players? These would be the things that I would spend talking if I'm an AD. How are you going to recruit? How are you going to get players? It has to make sense. You have to have as both you guys said, you have to have that defined plan, because if you don't, yeah, it's not as simple at Oregon. You know, it's just you have to get people to get on a plane to come see you. And a lot of schools are distant, but you ever flown to Portland? It's a long way from a lot of places, right? It's just long. And so it's like, can you get them to do that? Not easy.
It was like lightning in a bottle, Mitch, because like it was just also coinciding with the transformation of the entire image of that program. And Oregon is what, one of two programs that have gone from good to elite in the last 20 years? I mean, how many programs
Clemson
have done that?
Being the other.
Clemson being the other? Yeah, I don't know.
It's amazing what they did. And the facilities are great.
They're great.
And the energy is great. And the fans are great. But you're still in Eugene, Oregon.
Everybody has good facilities now. Like, that's not I don't think they're as good as the Nike ones that they have up there. And I understand the uniform things. But if you've noticed, guys, when things were first taking off at Oregon, the facilities were insane. The uniform combinations were really cool. But everybody wears alternates now. Everybody has different kinds of helmets and cleats and shoes. Now there's Jordan brands. You know, everybody's got exciting offenses. And it's just like, what is Oregon going to do next you know, put a waterfall in their facility or have PlayStation 5 in their locker. Like, there's cool things. And I do think that a lot of the kids that are going through recruiting now have grown up thinking that Oregon was just a cool place. But the thing with coaching hires, too, that's so hard to predict, like, you guys will know, that hiring Lincoln Riley at USC was a slam dunk because of the – not only because he's a big-time name that adds instant juice, but he has testimony of making the playoff. But it's like if Chip Kelly isn't recruiting top 15 classes in L.A., you're going to tell him to get back on a plane so we can get the band back together and then have people come up on unofficial visits, fly into Portland and drive an hour and a half or 2 hours or however long it is. As you know, on this podcast, I'm not very good with driving times. but I have made that drive from Portland to Eugene, and it's a really hard thing to do. And I think the hardest thing in football is being at a place where it's hard to take an unofficial visit. Like, anybody can take an official if it's paid for. Like, Nebraska, like, is a pain. Well, when I used to cover them or cover Ohio State and go to road games at Nebraska, I'd fly into Kansas City and rent a car and drive up 2 hours or 3 hours. Or I would fly into Omaha and have to drive an hour. And it's like, that stuff's not cheap for people who have to pay their own way. And the best way to get prospects on your campus or to gauge real interest with these prospects is to get them to come on their own dime first. So
The number one predictor of success is proximity to talent, okay? Now, all these can be overcome. Proximity to talent, and then, can you get me to the league? And, you know, so you get to the point where guys are coming all over to go to play for Nick Saban because they'll get you to the league. But there's also has that base of great players. When Pete Carroll had it absolutely rolling at SC, he'd round up 17 kids from L.A., and then he'd go out and get six more who wanted to get to the league, and you have yourself a super program. So you can overcome that, but when you're missing one of those two things, and Oregon will always miss that, it takes a lot to overcome it.
Do you think Nick Saban could win a national championship next or starting next year at Oregon State? Or do you think there's even a limit to some jobs that are so stacked up against it when it comes to tradition, league manufacturing in terms of talent and proximity to talent? Like, do you think there's coaches that have transcended all those things that can, you know, rise above that? And it's not like that's a realistic question, but sometimes I wonder, we spend so much
time. I doubt it.
We spend so much time
talking about the best jobs. Win a national title? No. Yeah.
What about the worst jobs? Are there just.
There's a reason these coaches very rarely stay at that place, right? You talk Brian Kelly or, you know, the ones that stay kind of hit a ceiling. A Mark D'Antonio, right? Did an incredible job at Michigan State, but there was just. There was a ceiling that he hit, or I don't think you can win a national title at Oregon State unless it's over 15 years of build.
Saban has such a reputation now. I wonder, just in the short term,
it's fun to think about.
Just so many kids would flock to him because he's Nick Saban. Like, if you took Nick Saban from 10 years ago, 12 years ago, before he became this known as the greatest coach ever, I don't think that's the case. But I think he could build an elite roster at a place like Oregon State just because of his reputation.
Yeah, I don't know. Oregon State might be a bridge too far, but I think you could definitely do it at UCLA.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's certain,
yeah.
So, to me, when you're talking about Chip Kelly, it's just like, how much can we excuse the idea that he hasn't recruited very well in one of the most densely populated talent areas in the country?
I thought he'd kill it. I did too.
The whole thing is, in college football, and this is the reason why I'm so obsessed with the Lincoln Riley hire. These kids want familiarity and brand. And if you have the brand and you have the fact that, like, Lincoln Riley made three Heisman winners and went to the playoff three or four, combine all that together, I think USC will be in the playoff in 3 years or less. That's my personal opinion. And I didn't know that Chip, I didn't think that Chip Kelly would make UCLA what I believe USC is going to be in a few years, but I didn't think it would be this.
This year was better, but yeah, it's been slow. It's been slower than you would expect. But
he's the highest rated player that UCLA has signed in his tenure. Not a single 5-star prospect. I don't think they've gotten. Yeah. I think it might be.
Is DTR the highest?
Yeah, and he was. I think like a middle tier 4-star, wasn't he?
And I get that, like, the stadium's off campus and it's old and all that. I mean, the Rose Bowl's a beautiful place, but it's far off campus and all the fans. But it's like. Anyone who's ever stepped foot on UCLA, whether they're 16 or they're 60, they go, whoa, I should have gone here. Or can I go here? I mean, that place, you step foot on UCLA and you're like, this is the greatest place ever. Why? I was like, why didn't I know about this? I would have studied harder.
Yeah. Also, a team that doesn't have an on-campus stadium, I guess it's kind of close. Pitt just won the ACC, and I think you can make the case too that UCLA has an easier path. And I know that Clemson was down, but like there are four or five teams in the Pac-12 that are two or three classes away from winning that conference. Like, maybe not anymore, but UCLA should be a 10-win team in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, I want Dan to answer what Miami's ceiling is. But question for both you guys. This is Ari's going to struggle with this one. What is the most remote, I looked this up, Power 5 school? Like, which school is the greatest distance between that school and another Power 5 school in the country?
Another Power 5 school or a major city?
No, another Power 5 school. Like, so as far as recruiting, like
I mean, the one that jumped out to me immediately was Washington State, but I don't know how far away that is from Seattle.
It is not. Seattle to Pullman is 284 miles.
Yeah. It's Miami.
Miami is second. That's why, because Dan, Ari showed me.
He gave me that lesson, yeah.
Yeah, Miami is so much more remote than you think.
Let me make the other guess.
Miami to Gainesville is 337 miles.
Utah?
It is the second most remote. What'd you say, Dan?
Utah?
Yes, Salt Lake City. Yeah. Boulder is the closest. It's 519 miles, and Boulder is closer to Lincoln, Nebraska than that. So
yeah. You should do the same question.
I'm good at geography.
You
are
good
at geography. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. The one thing that I am curious about is which one is the furthest away from a major metropolitan area.
Well, what do you define major metropolitan area?
That might be Washington State.
We'd probably have to define like population limits.
Like Omaha's a major metropolitan area, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I guess so.
So Nebraska.
Kansas City's closer than Pullman to Seattle. Kansas City, yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
I just found out like a year ago that Pullman is basically in Idaho. Like
borders
I'm still,
up. I think the bars in Idaho are like open later.
Yeah.
And they go
over there, which I think is stupid. It's like you're telling the Washington State kids to drunk drive home from the bar. Like just annex a little area, right? Yeah, yeah.
All right, so Miami. It's a program we all like to talk about. Dan, we're a little bit older than Ari here. We remember at its peak. What's Miami's ceiling?
National title. It's 20 years ago. They had the best program in the country, and it wasn't close. They were annihilating people. Now, I know past, like, at one point, Nebraska had the best program in the country. But Nebraska was, you know, they were ahead on weight room. This was a time when budgets were determined by ticket sales, and they sold out every game in their huge thing. Like they had, you can't duplicate a lot. A lot of the things that made them great don't matter anymore. And their problem is no talent. Miami's problem is they don't have an on-campus stadium. And other than that, they haven't been able to keep the talent home. But there are six top 85 kids on rivals.com from just the three counties of South Florida. That part of South Florida. That's it. There are, I think there are 18 four or five star recruits just in Palm, Broward, and Miami-Dade County. Miami is a gold mine if you can maximize it. And when they maximize, they won five national titles in 18 years, and they had incredible talent. I mean, they had just stacked up. The 2001 team had 17 first round draft picks on it. 17. They're Hall of Famers. I mean, they stack up. Miami's sitting there. It's a unique school. It's a smaller private school, but people love the U there. And the closest Division I power, the closest Power Five school to the cities of it's the city of Miami, other than Miami, is Florida, 320 miles away. So you are the. It's not that you can pitch stay home. You're the only one that can pitch staying home. Going to Gainesville is a totally different culture. It gets colder in the sun, in the winter. Your mom and dad are going to drive a long way. And that's it. After Florida, everything's a plane. Florida State, Alabama, everything is a plane. So you talk about your unofficial visits. You want to drive, 14 hours somewhere for an unofficial visit, right? It's a tough visit. So these Miami kids, it's right there. It's the most geographically isolated talent base in the country. And there's one school there. I did a thing in this column I wrote about it. If you take 320 miles and draw a big circle around Atlanta, You basically get seven SEC programs, Clemson and Florida State, plus Georgia Tech or some others, right? All that. They're all fighting for Atlanta. You draw 320 miles around Miami, and all you got is the edge of Florida.
Why every single coach that has been hired since Larry Coker has had that same mission?
Sure.
We're going to keep kids home. We're going to own Miami. We're going to bring the U back with U talent. Why has it been so hard?
You know, you have Miami's a crazy city, right? They have all sorts of different political factions. They've had multiple big NCAA violation cases that knocked them back for a while. You have a school that didn't invest in infrastructure and facilities for a long time. The coaches weren't that good. Again, proximity is one, but 1A is get me to the league. So where'd these guys start going? Alabama, Ohio State, you know, Louisville. But you can't sit there and be like, oh, we had Lamar Jackson and Teddy Bridgewater in our backyard. We got neither. We lost them to Louisville. Like, come on, right? Like, that's the kind of talent that's sitting around Miami, whether they're five-star or they're incredible talents. If you can identify, hey, I'm going to let Lamar Jackson play quarterback. Yeah, that might work out for you.
Yeah, that's the thing with Miami, too. It's like you just listed out all the blue-chip prospects. But if you also take into account that there are three-star Lamar Jacksons running around there.
Yeah.
Was he rated the 400 or 500th most talented player in what class? Was the 15 class? Like, if you add a few of those guys in there and a few hit, it's just like, I agree with you. And also, they play in a conference that's very winnable.
Sure. Winnable. The city loves you. It's they can win it all. Will they? I don't know. I mean, it's
so does the city love them?
They do. They aren't going to go to games. They don't go to Dolphin games too, but they love the Dolphins. Okay, they don't go to games. They don't go to Miami Heat games until they're in. If you're winning, yeah, they'll go. They'll go some. But there was better at the Orange Bowl. The Orange Bowl was a great facility, and you know.
Why
but
don't they go? Because it's Miami.
Just it's the most. It's yeah. There's other things to do. Not everyone's a football fan. It's not. You know, it's isolated outside of the Miami area. You got to drive 5 hours to get there. Okay. Like, it's not one of these places that you just automatically have the whole state coming. No, people don't go to Miami. A lot of people go to Florida, Florida State, right? You have all that. It's just, it's a unique place, but one of their unique aspects is that isolation of talent. There's nothing else like it. The only other ones that compare, so we're just talking about UCLA and USC. Now they got to share it. But they also have San Diego and Orange County and all that. I mean, if you pile that up, that's why those jobs are so good. Dallas, Houston, tons of talent. Atlanta, sure, but everybody's in there fighting, and they can all say, hey, you can still, mom and dad can still see you play. You're only 2.5 hours away, right? Right. Come on up to Tennessee. Come over to Auburn. Come over to South Carolina. Everyone's in there. No one can offer that in Miami except one school.
So Clemson is the, as I already mentioned earlier, Oregon did it for a while, but Clemson's sort of the model. It's so difficult to change your spot on the food chain in college football. Texas A&M is a program that appears to be doing that. Sleeping giant, whatever term you want to use. What, from a recruiting standpoint, are there any other programs that you look around the country and think are just underachieving based on where they are? I can't understand why that program's just not better.
Tennessee, I think Clemson stole Tennessee's program. Like, they got, I mean, literally, like, Trevor Lawrence grew up a Tennessee fan, and he playing for, like, Tennessee is that 2.5 hours north of Atlanta. The north suburbs of Atlanta is just a phenomenal place to recruit and be. Tennessee should be better. Now they've been better. Texas A&M's never been great, or not since, you know, whatever, again, those old days. Texas A&M's one of those places, if you've ever been, you're like, I mean,
it's a different world.
It's a college town. I will say that. If a kid's willing to go to a college town, it's like, this place is, I mean, who wouldn't want to play football here? And you are almost equidistant between Houston, Austin, a little bit of San Antonio, and Dallas and the Metroplex up there. It's just and you know they care. They get this massive stadium off, and you go, boy, this place should be popping. They're finally popping now. I mean, they are really rolling, and it does not surprise me at all. I thought Kevin Sumlin would get to this level. It just didn't work out. But after the Johnny Manziel and a guy with that, you know, he was a good recruiter and a good leader. Just, you know, didn't pan out for him.
But Jimbo's got it going, and you sit there and say, yeah, why not? It's those campuses you go to and you go, yeah, why wouldn't you play here? I mean, everywhere is nice, but then you sit there and go, geez, this is like, at this point, some of the Houston suburbs are like an hour and 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
It ain't even far. And Houston's got so many great players. And then you take the rest of the state. And all those – Texas is crazy because, you know, if you drive through like – Southern Illinois, okay, like that whole area, there's no players. You go drive through Texas, every little town has got somebody every once in a while. Yeah. Right? This town's got 500 people and you see some sign. Oh, yeah, that kid. Yeah. Right? And that's – like there's just – there's just players everywhere.
Got five-star prospects in Texarkana, you know, like
yeah, exactly. And little, you know, where is Colt McCoy? Some little town. His dad's the high school coach, like that. You just don't get that in other rural areas of the country, like Nebraska. Yeah, it's like Danny Woodhead, and nobody else from Nebraska, right? There's not that many guys.
I wonder why
out
that
there.
Is. I never thought about that, Dan. That's really interesting. I wonder what
demographics of the towns.
Do you think that it's also like just how football is? Value
football matters protection. And then some of the demographics and
you ever watch Friday Night Lights?
Yeah, but it's funny because Permian's only had like one blue chip prospect the last 7 years or something like that.
But that league, I mean, you got Permian, you got Odessa High, you got Midland Lee, Midland High.
Yeah.
You know, and over to Abilene and Abilene, what are they? Is Abilene? I can't remember the other one. Someone almost had it. There's players there, but you don't. Odessa Permian does not churn them out like they used to.
You know, here's
another one.
I wanted to say one thing real quick about A&M before you change it.
Okay.
So I have lived in Texas now for 18 months, and the first year I lived here was COVID, so there wasn't a lot happening. And I don't. But my fiance went to Texas A&M, and a lot of the friends that I've made through her since I've moved here are A&M people. And I will say, and I covered Ohio State for 10 years, and I know what a rabid fan base looks like. But Texas A&M people love Texas A&M more than I think most people love their program. There's something about A&M. I don't know what it is. I don't even know if I can explain it. But there's
the Texas thing going against Texas, the bigger – you know,
it's that little army they have. It's the little army, the soldiers and all that. No, I don't know. They love A&M, and they love being an Aggie. I'll give you one more on why Texas – I forgot about this. This is one of the things that helps Texas is they take high school sports very seriously, and they have – even the small schools have facilities. And as we've gotten – as the game has gotten more into development of players and weight rooms – and speed and quickness and all of that stuff, and certainly 7-on-7 ball being a huge thing down there. In states that have less money, a little poorer areas or very rural areas in the Midwest, they don't have weight rooms like that. They don't have the individual training like that. And so a lot of the prospects you'll find in like a small town in Mississippi, a lot of the prospects need time to develop. You have to get them in and say, I'm going to put weight on you and do this thing. If you get a kid from the suburbs of Dallas, they've already done all that stuff. And so that's why a lot of the five-star, ready-to-roll guys are coming in from fairly wealthy suburbs. Same reason that Atlanta, you know, the Atlanta suburbs are such a big deal, where some of the rural kids just don't have that opportunity. They don't have that access to all the things that you have. So it's kind of changing. And that's why some of these schools have to rely on developing players, but that's a hard thing to do.
All right, one program I wanted to ask you about. I just think it has a lot of potential too. They've won a national title. University of Washington. What do you think?
He's trying to fire me.
I know Ari is not a fan.
I'm not a fan. I think that they
really
have.
Really good. But I don't know if they could win a national title again. But really good. I mean, there's players in Seattle. You have to keep everybody home from Seattle, and then you have to get kids up there because it is a great school. Great location.
Great town.
Great city. All of that. Easy flight in. Kids in the West are more likely. They have less problem with a flying into some place. It's because it's a little more spread out where, you know, they'll go greater distances. You know, you get the right guy there, you can do really, really well. Can you get enough guys where you can – it's just so hard to win a national title now. There's no hiding. Like – I'm taking nothing from that team I mentioned earlier, 97 Michigan team, right? Again, they had Charles Woodson, all right? This team was loaded. But to win the national title, they won the Big Ten. They played Washington State.
in the Rose Bowl. And yeah, they had Ryan Leaf, but they played Washington State, and then that was it. Well, Harbaugh's got to play Georgia and Alabama back to back. Like, do you think Harbaugh would like my chance? You can win the national championship if you play Utah in the Rose Bowl. Yeah, take a shot at that. Or it's like, no, sorry. You got Georgia, Alabama back to back, presumably.
2 weeks
Alabama.
Removed from beating Ohio State.
Right. Like, he has a much harder role of getting a national title in a successful season than Bo Schembech or even Lloyd Carr had.
Anybody. Jim Tressel.
Anybody.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, the thing that irks me about Washington is that Seattle does seem to be, and I don't know, like, population trends, I think, are a huge thing when it comes to recruiting. And I'd like to look at the population trends and kind of, you know, of every state and try to see what we can surmise from it. But Seattle, for whatever reason, has had more five-star prospects in the city or the city limits.
Got a lot of wealthy suburbs, too.
That have had, like, really, really good players, more so than ever before, I feel like. And Jimmy Lake, who was the head coach at Washington before
Ari's
being
good buddy.
Fired, I don't understand. He got hired to be a recruiter. They had 3 top 10 kids nationally in Seattle last year. And I don't think that there are – I think there are only maybe 3 teams in college football that have 3 top 10 national players on their roster at any given time. And to only get one of them –
it was
just
a legacy.
It was just like a legacy.
And to lose them to Ohio State.
Like, and lose two, like, across the country. And I understand, right. Like, if Alabama comes into your town and wants your kids, and you lose those kids to Alabama, like, you have to
get
accept
me to
it.
The pros, right?
Yeah,
get me to the pros. That's,
but then how
so
do you break
proximity
that?
To talent or get me to the pros?
How do you break that streak or how do you break that cycle then? Because you, that's the thing that,
start
like,
winning.
Blows my mind. But, like, you need the players to win, but you can't win without the players.
Don't lose to Montana in your opener.
Yeah, I understand. I know. But also,
this is what I'm interested in now. I think this is what I think the playoff will help, because you can build a program and develop. And let's say Washington can get good enough where they can win the Pac-12. They host a playoff game. It's a big, huge night in Seattle. They beat, you know, whoever has to, Ole Miss or somebody comes up there. It's the biggest victory on campus they ever had. And then you lose, right? Because they had that. They made the Final playoff, Four yeah. once. And yep. they got crushed by Alabama, as everyone does when they play Alabama, pretty much. But what if Chris Peterson had 1 or 2 games ahead of that, including a home game, and it builds momentum, and then all of a sudden you get a little bit better, and you can keep guys at your school? Because it's a different sport. But look at Gonzaga. Gonzaga gets the number one player of the year now, regularly, playing in the West Coast Conference, and they got it done by – first, they were just making the tournament. Then they get to Sweet 16, and then they beat Oregon State for a recruit, beat a couple Pac-12 schools for low Pac-12, and then they got a little better, and they got a little better, and you go and go and go until, yeah, kids are coming in from Minnesota to play for Gonzaga. Now, I understand it's basketball, but it's the same concept. I'll get you to the pros. We can win a national title. I think the playoff, by creating a little extra, redefining what success is, right? You can hang a Sweet 16 banner in college basketball and recruit off that. In college football, it's like, hey, Michigan State, you climb the mountaintop, you won the Big Ten, and you get absolutely curb stomped by Alabama. And it's just like, ugh. Well, that's a lot easier if that's in the Final Four. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, the thing that's, I think that is cool, like, redefining success. Because right now, success in college football is make the playoff or win a national title or you're a loser. And, like, I do understand
that. It's win, because, like, people bag on Notre Dame.
Yeah,
But they actually have, like, their staff will tell you making those playoffs, even though they didn't win, helped big.
Yeah.
But imagine if they win a game. Whether it's 8 or 12, you win a game, then you lose to
Alabama.
It's
just a matter of whether or not you think that winning in a 12-team first round has the same weight as winning in the semifinal now.
It doesn't,
but like, Ari, we've talked about this. Ari wrote a story about this last year, and just kind of what Dan just said. When you can sell that our program makes the playoffs 3 out of every 4 years, you don't need to go to Alabama. You don't need to go to Ohio State. You can come to Washington.
I need one more guy. We're going to get there.
Yeah,
right?
It's funny though, because you use the NFL draft numbers as a selling point of we'll get you to the league. But we look at Alabama and Clemson and Georgia and these teams that have so many players going to the league every year, And it's like, well, no crap that they have the highest numbers because the best players are going there.
Right.
It's like this like self-fulfilling
prophecy. You screwed up Najee Harris.
Like, how do you screw up Najee Harris?
Well, it's like Jay Billis always says about Kentucky. Jay Billis says it's about Kentucky basketball. They don't develop pros. They recruit pros. And that's
Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis, right? Yeah. They used to go right from the high school.
And somebody asked me this too. Like, could Cincinnati be football's Gonzaga? And, like, I don't know if that's even possible because in basketball, all you need is one or two guys. And in football, you need 25.
No, it's and a different animal.
It seems to me that it's just like, do you think that there's a route or a path?
But Gonzaga's never won the national title.
No, I know.
But nobody blinks anymore when they're number one, right? You could build. I think the playoff will allow people to build a little bit more. Imagine the excitement. You know how it is in the NFL. I mean, I don't care what team, they win a playoff game and the city is electric, okay?
After going 9-7.
The Cleveland Browns had all the momentum last year because they won a playoff game. The Buffalo Bills won two, right? Or one or two, I don't remember. But then they lost to Kansas City. But still, everyone's sky high. And football, you win one playoff game, let alone two, and it's just going to be, whoa, hey, I'll take another look. Look at Michigan right now. They make the playoff. Now, look, Michigan's got a lot going for it. But if they're gonna get 3 to 4 top hundreds in the last – since making the playoff, that's – I mean, that shows the power just making it. What if they're winning a game?
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, how that all maps out. I wonder, and maybe it's not a good comparison because Cincinnati is quote-unquote Power 5 now. But, like, would there ever be – and Cincinnati's in the playoff. You want to talk about group of five, just making it there probably is the equivalent of a national championship at other Power Five schools. But will Cincinnati ever get the number one player in the 247 composite rankings?
If he's from Cincinnati, Moeller High School or something like
guess
that.
If he just, I don't know. If he just happened to be born.
It's going
to
take that.
Houston's come the closest.
Yeah.
Houston's gotten good players. You know, Houston's always got great potential. And that's always been the question. Now, you know, what if you just can play for the city school? Houston's going to be a very interesting program to watch.
All right, we got to let Dan go in a few minutes here, but I wanted to do a little research sort of about sleeping Giants programs that could recruit a little bit better. Out of the, not including 2022 signees, so not guys committed, out of these six schools, who do you guys think have signed the most five stars of the modern era from 2002? Ooh, like Virginia, Arkansas, South Carolina, Michigan State, Washington, or UNC?
What's the question again?
Which one of the six schools have signed the most five stars of the modern recruiting era?
Oh, you want me to answer?
Just both yes.
I would say...
Well, can you name the schools one more time? Sorry. Okay.
Dan wrote it down, I think. He's paying attention. Virginia, Arkansas, South Carolina, Michigan State, Washington, North Carolina.
I think it's one of the Carolinas. I'm going to go with North.
Ari?
Well, including the last few classes, I think I'm going to go with North.
Okay, including not 2022. So they've got three committed?
Is it Michigan State?
It is Virginia. Seven. Virginia, seven. South Carolina, Washington, six. Arkansas, Michigan State, five.
I was wrong.
North Carolina had signed four up until place. This year.
It's easy to get caught up in North Carolina, though, because this year
there's a lot of players, though. Yeah. I just thought, like, you pick up that one guy here or there, right? That's what Virginia did.
Virginia, who was the coach? Who's the former cop? I forgot. He was a coach at Richmond and then at London, Mike London.
Yeah, good coach.
I don't know what he was there at the right time, but they signed some in-state five stars. They had a little good run where they were signing a couple every year.
He's at William & Mary now, I think, and he actually. He's a guy that it didn't work out for him, and they didn't win enough.
Well.
But he's a guy. He's one of those guys that like no one will ever. They don't look at him as like a second shot guy. But it'd be interesting.
Well, one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL right now went to Virginia, right? Like Eugene Monroe went there. I think
he was one of the five stars. Yeah,
yeah.
I figured Quinn Spurrier got a bunch of them. I remember Spurrier being like, "We have to win the South Carolina battles," and his theory was always, "If you're not doing well in the state, you can't do well. You can't go to Jacksonville. You can't go to Atlanta and say, hey, come to South Carolina." And they look at the rankings and go, why are the kids locally not coming there?
Yeah, he was there at the right time, right before Clemson, Marcus Latimer, obviously Jadeveon Clowney. Right. So they had a good run.
And he was Spurrier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a school. That's a school with great potential. South Carolina has great potential.
Great fans.
Same with Clemson's kind of the thing, but centrally located in a city, great fans, excellent campus, all that, everything you want. South Carolina and a lot of really good players locally.
I want to ask Dan one question. Here's the thing: when you have somebody like Dan on the show, an hour goes by fast, and I feel like we haven't even started yet. Like, I could sit here for six hours.
I'm coming back.
I really hope so.
Wait till we go in May, you know,
We need to fill some time in May.
I feel like I almost have anxiety because I feel like we didn't, like, capitalize on all the things that we could have capitalized on.
I do have my trivia question, though, that it's that wasn't it. I have a one tailored specifically for our guests.
Oh, that wasn't it? Okay.
No, that was just talk.
Let me ask Dan one thing, and then you can do the trivia, and then we'll let him go.
Okay.
What's wrong with Texas?
that's another hour.
Yeah, I trapped
he's just,
him.
For those,
I
just he's just to, shaking, he's
what's
just
wrong
shaking
with Miami?
His head.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, it's so
it
hard.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
Boosters that are fighting. Quick trigger on firings. You know, maybe they don't give enough time. They want instant results. Does it attract the right kind of five-star that really wants to work? The SEC, man, adding Texas A&M in the SEC helped SEC schools recruit the state of Texas. That was one of Mike Slive's big plans. I used to argue. I argued with him. I thought he shouldn't have taken Missouri, should take TCU and double down in Texas. It turns out they're doubling down with Texas but there's so many players. I don't know. It's a mystery. There's no reason you shouldn't at least be, and this is kind of funny, but at least be Michigan good. At least be, we're 8-3, we're 8-4, we're 9-3 every year. Well, we can't beat these guys, but.
It keeps me up at night, Dan.
Right? At least Michigan is always
serviceable. Yeah.
Good, right?
Yeah.
Other than last year's COVID thing, but
Texas has no negatives. It's a great school. It's a great town. It's hot as hell, but a lot of places are hot.
Million players. They all want to go there. Matt Brown used to sign, like, he'd have 18 commitments, like, the day after signing day for the next year. He'd have junior day, and they'd all just line, and he'd just be like, first 18 of you guys. And they'd be like, I'm in.
And it is interesting. The one thing that I wrote about 6 months ago, and Mitch helped me with, is that you talk about the building process and winning a playoff game and all the things that the expanded playoff can do. I sometimes wonder, it's like if you look at the last program that actually built something was Clemson, and they gave Dabo, what, like 5 years before he really started winning big? And I just don't think that programs have the temperament now to wait. And if you keep firing guys and you keep hiring guys, you keep setting back your recruiting momentum, and you never give anybody enough time to finish the recipe. So I wonder
people
if that's
don't.
What's happening at Texas a little bit too.
They don't get to every time you fire. Okay. So you have a staff and sometimes you have a very popular guy, Brandon. He's got Texas ties, right? And we fire him in 3 years and guys go, well, that was my friend. You just can't screw you. I'm done with this place. Like, high school coaches are not infinitely loyal to the state school and they're not always there to help everybody. And sometimes you're just always canning people. Or it's like, man, I really like that guy and that staff. And it's like, these guys are always firing people. I don't like how they do. Like, nothing happens in a vacuum. You just bring the new guy in and be like, oh, everyone's going to like him because the fans like the new coach. Always.
Always.
Every fan likes the new coach, right?
Hope.
And so you go, right? But there are some people in Florida who are like, Dan, I've known Dan Mullen 25 years. I love that guy. Man, they just fired him after one season. You know? And they happen to coach the right high school. Everyone can make things harder. You're the 7-on-7 coach. So firings have impact. What's trivia?
Are you ready?
I think Dan likes trivia.
Okay.
Terrible at it. I got last. North Carolina. What was I thinking?
This is extremely difficult. The purpose of these trivia questions is
to make me look like an asshole.
Well, just no, most of them are impossible to get. Who is the highest ranked recruit in the modern era?
Oh, boy.
Of the University of Massachusetts football.
Oh, good God.
Oh, I mean, come on.
That's his alma mater. All right. I did my research.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. All right.
I didn't just pick UMass.
I thought
football.
You were like, okay, I gotcha.
The highest rated recruit at UMass? I'm going to say Liam Cohen, the current Kentucky offensive coordinator and our quarterback. I know he wasn't. I have absolutely no idea.
I did not expect. Running back Lorenzo Woodley, three-star class of 2013, played 3 years there, rushed for about 700 yards in his career.
There you go. A three-star. Yeah. UMass. Yeah. Go back to FCS. That's my thing with that. They get mad at me. People get mad. There are a couple of UMass fans. I had to go on a UMass football podcast to try to defend. They were all mad at me because I'm always like, it's never happening. It's never happening. And they're like, oh, we could do this. We could do this. And like, we're literally talking about whether Washington can do it. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, right? It's like, I don't know. South Carolina can hit its feet. Like, you're like, I've been to all these places. It just doesn't work.
Why is the football culture in the Pacific Northwest? Sorry. We're just talking about Washington, the Northeast. Yeah. Because I have a few of my closest friends live in Boston, and one of my best friends actually ran track at UMass. And I always just thought, like, why are there – I used to make fun of Michigan because they had that Don Brown Massachusetts pipeline. But, like, there just aren't players there.
No. Yeah, it's demographics. It's, you know, you have
not a lot of football talent in Maine.
No. I mean, Maine is like, I think, the oldest state in the country. Yeah, this just they're playing hockey. They're doing other things. Yeah. It's just not the, you know, they play football, but it's a lot of things are demographics. A lot of things are demographics, you know, and it's like you get in the Northeast, there's a lot of immigrants come into the Northeast and they're not, you know, you don't grow up in wherever playing football. Right. So it's cultural. I don't know. You think there are some. I mean, there's some good ones, but not in the numbers that you need. No question.
Are you
hockey players? There's basketball players. There's all that.
Dan, we really appreciate you, man. I love your work. There's always a few. There's always stories that you write, and if you're unfamiliar with Dan Wetzel, then you need to recalibrate your priorities. But like, there's a few of the columns that you've written in over the years have stuck. Like, if ever anybody wanted to know how I would describe you, I'd send that Floyd Mayweather column you wrote from Vegas from the strip club. What was that, 6-7 years ago now? That was like, I was looking up into the, I will tell you, I mean this, and I'm not just kissing your ass because you're on the show. I was reading this column and I thought to myself,
I did. I was able to say I went to work and then I did go to,
girl collection right
there.
The
access, the trust, the ability to like put yourself in that position is like the most unbelievable thing to me. And it's just like, and maybe it's because I've covered college football for such a long time. It's like, it's lucky that they make the quarterback available to everybody once a week, you know, and you're out there the night before the biggest fight in the history of boxing at the time. And it's just like, I was just like, I cannot believe this guy.
Couple nights. Well, yeah. Here, I'll give you a, if you probably didn't read it. It was he, oh, Mayweather was fighting McGregor. Yeah, he's fighting, right? Mayweather is Mayweather
McGregor.
I think
it was the Pacquiao fight.
No. I think it was McGregor because I'm pretty sure it was McGregor. And I was there and he's saying someone had told me he's been hanging out at his gentleman's club. That's the term I prefer to use. The gentleman's club, girl collection. He trains late for the fight because you're going to fight at like 9 o'clock in Vegas or 10, you know, something around there. So he'd train. Then he go hang out at Girl Collection. He doesn't drink. Of all the things Floyd Mayweather does do, he does not drink. So I saw him at the thing, and I said, "Hey, you going to that thing?" I said, I kind of like asked him on the side, and he's like, "Yeah." I said, "You're gonna be there tonight?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "All right, I'm gonna come." And he goes, "All right, whatever, right?" And goes, and so I just go, and he comes in, and I'm like, "Hey, I'm here." And he's like, "Oh crap, you showed up." And I'll never forget. I go, "Are you going to win this thing? Like, you're hanging out in a gentleman's club 2 nights before the fight."
I'm looking at it right now, and it was the richest.
It wasn't in
the
story, but he lifts up his shirt and he's completely ripped, right? Floyd Mayweather is a great fight. I've covered many, many great. He's totally in shape. And then he goes, "Watch this." And he shows me this video on his phone of him sparring like that day or 2 days, whatever, his last sparring. I don't often spar 2 days before because you can get cut. And he's absolutely annihilating this guy. And he just starts laughing. And I'm like, all right, McGregor is done. I don't bet the fights. It's really one time. Ethics killed me. I'm like, don't bet the fights that you cover. Like, you just can't. You're not supposed to. At least I don't. But it was like, McGregor's. Like, I knew McGregor was going to lose. But it was just like, oh, crap. Like,
what were the odds of that? Like, you had to bet $500 to win $100.
Yeah, he couldn't.
Yeah, or to
he
win.
He carried him. But yeah. Floyd's a showman.
No, I love Floyd Mayweather. The fact
for access.
Yeah. The fact that you were able to talk to him in that environment.
Journalism lesson. Show up. You never know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Go to some high school. Show up, Ari.
Yeah. Come on, Ari. Off this podcast. Put you on the road.
I do want to be on the road, by the way. So, you know, I will. But, Dan, thank you so much for taking time. I hope we do this again because I feel like we only scratched the surface of what we could have done.
Well, I literally listen to every pod. I mean, I love the show. So I'm listening if I'm not here. But
are you going to listen back to yourself?
I don't think I'll do that. But so I lived it, man. I lived it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Well,
but no, maybe I will. But yeah, have me on again in the spring. Guys are doing great. There's just a market for it. Maybe we're all weird. Well,
that's definitely true.
But there's these recruiting people out there that just were in. I love signing day.
Yeah, to Stars Matter, loyal listeners like Dan, thank you so much for listening to this extra episode. We've got the early signing period coming up on Wednesday. Mitch is taking a vacation.
It's not a vacation. It's an editor's meeting in Chicago. It's work fine. Trip.
My work won't be edited by my editor during the most important week of my
Get your stuff done early, I will edit it.
Thank you so much for listening. For Dan Wetzel, for Mitch Light, I'm Ari Wasserman. I was Ari Wasserman. That was Stars Matter. Thanks for listening.